Mr. Daniel.
I'm a great admirer of the Sydney Institute. As Gerard mentioned, this is my third time speaking. I also attended your annual dinner for the Prime Minister a year and a half ago. And I've been a faithful reader of your publications for at least a decade now. It's good to be back. It's good to see familiar faces, Alan Gold and others. I'm also a great admirer of Ida Lichter's book. In fact, if you look at it, I'm the first person on the back cover, coincidentally, where I call it a compelling piece of research. Ida mentioned Wafa Sultan in passing. In 3 weeks, on December 1st, I'll be debating Wafa at my initiative. I thought it would be interesting to have a discussion of whether the problem is Islam or radical Islam. And she and I will be discussing this issue, and it'll be videotaped for the internet in New York on December 1st. It's never been done before, to the best of my knowledge. No one's actually had a debate on the question of what is the enemy, what is the problem. My topic, and I'll be very brief since we've already used up a good part of our half hour, is the evolution of radical Islam in recent years. The primary figures in the first phase of this phenomenon in the 1980s and 90s, and indeed until the first years of this millennium, were figures like Ayatollah Khomeini of Iran and Osama bin Laden from Saudi Arabia. And while they're very different, they share a brutality in common, a willingness to use force, terrorism, criminality, totalitarian means to impose the Sharia, Islamic law. I think it's safe to say that this project is not going to succeed. The Iranian Republic, although it's been around for 30 years now, is doomed. It does not have the following of its people. The Iranians, by large measure, reject the system that they live in. Bin Laden's vision is unattainable, clearly. And while these kind of Islamists who use violence and who are ready to impose their will through brutal means are dangerous, very dangerous, I don't think they can achieve their goals. They can kill people. The 200 people in Bali and the 3,000 in New York and Washington are actually very small numbers compared to what it could be. Bin Laden's been known to look for atomic weaponry. It could be in the hundreds of thousands or even the millions. I don't dispute that they could pull off such atrocities. I do doubt that they will achieve their goal of creating societies where Islamic law is applied and where a caliphate is created. I do think that there's another way that Islamists have that is more subtle, more political, less violent, and more sustainable. In part because it doesn't attract our attention and our venom in the way that, say, terrorism does. And that's working through the system. That is working with the media and the schools and the politicians and the law courts and the other institutions, the businesses, the institutions of society. And one can see this at play in the majority of Muslim countries and in the West. For example, in a country like Egypt, where there was a powerful terrorist organization that worked for many years called the Jamaa Islamiya, which, for example, attacked tourists in Luxor, killing some 57, I think, Swiss and other tourists a few years ago, decimating the tourist trade in Egypt, which some 10% of Egyptians are said to rely on. They can have a real impact, but they were rejected. Had an approach that was unpopular. And so Jamaa Islamiya gave up terrorism. And at first blush, it appeared to be a total victory. They'd given up. But in fact, they hadn't given up their goals. They gave up their tactics. They gave up violence, murder. And instead, they began to work through the system. And the Egyptian government has rewarded the Islamists who come in from the cold. It has given them television programs, access to the schools, an ability to organize the unions and syndicates, and as a result, to build hospitals and clinics, schools. As a result, the Islamists are penetrating society and the state. and are furthering their goals in a much more efficacious manner. One can see the same in Algeria, where there was a major insurrection in the 1990s. It was defeated. The Islamists are working through the system. In Syria, the insurrection, the violent insurrection, was capped in 1982 with an attack by the state on the city of Hama, killing an estimated 20,000 people. That insurrection's done, over with. But instead, one finds an infiltration of society. And likewise, in the West, one sees, yes, terrorism, but what are the benefits of terrorism? The only real example I can point to was Madrid, where the killing of a couple hundred people led to a change in policy towards Iraq. It didn't lead to an Islamization of Spain. And elsewhere, if one looks, what did Bali achieve? What did 9/11 achieve? What did 7/7 achieve in London? What did Beslan achieve in Russia? What did these major atrocities achieve? I don't think one can point to much. But at the same time, one can see a chipping away, an eating, a termite-like eating through the institutions of society by the Islamists. And the most dramatic case is where I had to cut her teeth in the United Kingdom, where one sees the onrush of Islamization at extraordinary pace. Practically every day there's some news. And I'm someone who's been studying Islam for 4 decades now, and I'm astonished by the things that are taking place, things that just haven't happened before. One can watch the transformation of Britain before one's very eyes. And this is happening not through violence. 7/7 was the exception. And it's, again, hard to see what it achieved. The real work is being done quietly, or not so quietly, evenly, but steadily through non-violent means, political means, lawful means. Let me give you one example. The Muslim Council of Britain, which is the most important Islamist institution in the country, has put out a couple of years ago a book about state-funded or taxpayer-funded schools, in which it gave its program for what changes it would like to see. And this 80-page booklet transforms British schools into Saudi schools, because it takes every aspect of school life, from the yearly schedule to the holidays, to the weekly schedule and the prayer services, to the subjects being taught, such as art and history and religion, and food services, sports practices, relations between males and females. And if the whole of it were applied, it would be a fundamentally different school. Now, it has not been applied. But yet, the presence of this book and the backing of an important Islamist organization means that there's pressure steadily. And one finds, one day you wake up and you find that a primary school in Oxford is serving halal food just like that. And no one was really consulted. Or other such developments. And step by step, in the aggregate, one sees a change of society. Just as in Egypt or Algeria or Syria, one sees that same transformation taking place in the West. And I would argue that that's more effective. It's more effective because, on the one hand, it doesn't create the reaction. When a municipal swimming pool has women-only hours, is that banner headline? There are not the institutions of state arrayed against it, as in the case of violence. When you have violence, you're provoking law enforcement, the military, the intelligence service, judiciary system, the entire gamut of the protective institutions of the state come into play. And they have lots of experience in crushing violent efforts. But when you have a movement that claims to have to be the carrier of a superior civilization, quietly going about its work, we, particularly in the West, have no muscle. We have no consciousness. This is not something we're aware of. So I think there has been a fundamental shift in the last decade or so, in that what appeared to be, with Khomeini and bin Laden, what I call Islamism 1.0, the first version of it, the first iteration, violent and aggressive, totalitarian. Now one has Islamism 2.0, which is still aggressive, but in a political way, not a violent way. and I think has far greater prospects for success, be it in Algeria or in Britain, be it in in Egypt or in Australia. And I think one's focus needs to be much more on this insidious, quiet, political, lawful movement, and not just simply on the terrorism, the criminality, and the violence.